Thakur ki jai. Prem Sikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shri Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Mathura Dham ki jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki jai. Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai. Ganga Mayi Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotee. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pachaya Nivasesa Sanivani Paskacharya Satan. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's April 25th, 2012. Class over Skype. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Punishment and Reward of Kali, Text 13. Akya hi vrishabhadram va sadunam akridagasam atmavai rupya kartaram partanam kirti dushanam. Akya hi vrishabhadram va sadunam akritagasam atmavai rupya kartaram partanam kirti dushanam. Akyahi. Just let me know. Vrisha, O bull. Bhadram, good. Vaha, for you. Sadunam, of the honest. Akrita agasam, of those who are offenseless. Atmavai rupya, atmavai rupya, deformation of the self. Kartaam, the doer. Partanam, of the sons of Pritha. Kirti Dushanam, blackmailing the reputation. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O bull, you are offenseless and thoroughly honest. Therefore, I wish all good to you. Please tell me of the perpetrator of these mutilations which blackmail the reputation of the sons of Pritha. Purport. The reputation of the reign of Maharaj Ramachandra and that of the kings who followed in the footsteps of Maharaj Ramachandra, like the Pandavas and their descendants, are never to be forgotten, because in their kingdom, offenseless and honest living beings were never in trouble. The bull and the cow are the symbols of the most offenseless living beings, because even the stool and urine of these animals are utilized to benefit human society. The descendants of the sons of Pritha, like Maharaj Parikit, were afraid of losing their reputations. But in the modern days, the leaders are not even afraid of killing such offenseless animals. Herein lies the difference between the reign of those pious kings and the modern states ruled by irresponsible executive heads without knowledge of the codes of God. Akyahi vrisha badram va sarunam akritagasham atma vai rupyakartaram partanam kritidushanam. O bull, you are offenseless and thoroughly honest. Therefore, I wish all good to you. Please tell me of the perpetrator of these mutilations, which blackmail the reputation of the sons of Pritha. So here Prabhupada's talking about reputation. Kirti Dushanam. Kirti means fame. Dushanam means something bad. So they're giving us bad fame. Prabhupada uses the word blackmail. It seems that it means sort of to blacken, to disturb, to damage the reputation. And here Prabhupada talks about Maharaj Ramachandra and the Pandavas, who had reputations for protecting innocent and offenseless and honest living creatures. And Prabhupada says, the descendants of the sons of Pritha, like Maharaj Parikit, were afraid of losing their reputations. So this is very interesting, because we generally hear in the Shastra that one should not be interested in reputation. Of course, the most famous verse in this connection is one that many devotees chant daily or on a regular basis, and that Mahaprabhu said his spiritual master told him to wear around his neck. This is, of course, Trinada Pi Suhichena, Taror Iva Suhishnuna. Amani na manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Amani na manadena. You respect everyone, and you don't ask for any respect in exchange. You're more tolerant than a tree. So the example of the tree, Mahaprabhu explains, is that when the tree's thirsty, it doesn't ask for water. And if someone cuts it, it doesn't complain. So if it has internal problems, it doesn't complain. And if it has external problems, it doesn't complain. And lower than the grass. So the explanation is the grass springs back up after you step on it. So lower than the grass, someone who stays down. And Mahaprabhu talks about how a tree that is full of fruits is bent down by the fruits. So we so much emphasize this concept of not being interested in honor and respect. In fact, Krishna describing to Arjuna the divine qualities. And Krishna tells Arjuna, don't worry, you're born with these divine qualities. He says, freedom from the passion for honor. Right? That's in 16th chapter Bhagavad Gita, text 1 through 3. Freedom from the passion for honor. And then Krishna also says to Arjuna that the qualities needed to acquire knowledge start with humility, which Srila Prabhupada, this is in the 13th chapter, texts 8 through 12, and Srila Prabhupada, in that purport, defines humility as not being anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. Srila Prabhupada's definition of humility. Not being anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. So there's some satisfaction in being honored by others, but not being anxious for it, not caring for it, or as Krishna says earlier, freedom from the passion for honor. So why is it that although Arjuna is described by Krishna as free from the passion for honor, and Krishna tells Arjuna, you should be humble, which means not being anxious for the satisfaction of being honored by others, that here we learn that the sons of Pritha, which of course include Arjuna and Maharaj Parikshit, who is the grandson of Arjuna, that they were afraid of losing their reputations. And this is being presented as a very good thing. It's presented in contrast to modern leaders who don't care about their reputations. So what's going on here? Are we supposed to care about our reputation or not? Are we supposed to care about honor or not? Maharaj Parikshit seems very upset that Kali personified is damaging the honor, Kirti Dushanam, the fame of Parthanam. He's damaging the fame of the descendants of Kunti. So it's interesting that what's good and what's bad, first of all, depends on your perspective. We've talked about this before, that what's good for someone in a lower position may be bad for someone in a higher position. So first we're looking at that, and then we're looking at, even from the highest position, how does the devotee view things like respect and honor and reputation? So first of all, that one's perspective changes whether something is good or bad. This passion for honor is one of the primary symptoms of Rajagun, or the mode of passion. In the mode of ignorance, a person really doesn't care about honor. They'll do anything for their immediate sense gratification, and whatever happens, happens. They don't really care about the consequences for themselves or for anyone else. You'll find that in the descriptions of the mode of passion, persons are engaging in much the same behavior as those in the mode of goodness, but their motive is honor, prestige, pride, etc. They want some material benefits in the shape of wealth and good food and nice comforts for the body, and they want material benefits in the shape of honor and status for the mind. And that's what's driving them. And of course, Rajagun, Raja also means king. So the main thing that motivates a Shudra is sense gratification. What motivates a Vaishya is wealth. What motivates a Kshatriya is honor. What motivates a Brahmana is truth. Of course, that's talking materially. So materially speaking, it's much higher to be motivated by honor than not to be, than to be motivated by wealth or pleasure. The mode of passion is higher than the mode of ignorance. The mode of passion is the mode of dharma. The kings are interested in dharma. That was their business. That's explained here in this verse. What were the kings getting honor for? They were getting honor for protecting helpless, offenseless, and honest living beings. They were getting honor and reputation for doing the right thing. They were getting honor for being honorable. They weren't getting honor just because they had a lot of money, or because they could run faster than anyone else, or even because they were a great warrior in terms of technical skills. Kshatriyas were not only supposed to have great technical skills in battle, but they were supposed to do battles honorably, according to certain codes of chivalry. And a great warrior was somebody who followed these codes of chivalry. So Prabhupada's saying the modern politicians, they don't care whether or not they're protecting helpless and offenseless creatures. And here the bull and the cow are the epitome. They are the symbols, Prabhupada says here, of the most offenseless creatures. Generally, the stool is offensive. When my daughter first moved to India, to Govardhan, they were given a place to live. They were working for the Sanskrit school, and they were given a place to live where they were sharing with many other people, local villagers, and the people who would use the toilet. They didn't know how to use a toilet. You know, they were accustomed to just having the open field as a toilet. And so they would leave their stool and urine all over the floor of the toilet room. They wouldn't necessarily get it into the toilet. And so she was telling me how many, many times a day she had to go in there and clean up their stool. So that's offensive. If you go into a toilet room and somebody leaves their stool on the toilet seat or on the floor, that's considered offensive. But the cow and the bull, their stool is wonderful. Their stool is fertilizer. Their stool can be used for cleaning. Their stool is antiseptic. Generally, if you get animal stool or human stool on you, you're going to be subject to so many diseases, whereas the stool of the cow and the bull can even be used to cure diseases. And of course, it's used for cooking fuel and so many things, for medicine, so many medicines made from cow urine, for example. So offenseless that even the thing which is the most offensive about us earth beings, about us beings who have earth bodies. So what's really offensive of all the things from our body that come out of our body? So the most offensive is our stool and urine, but for the cow and the bull, their stool and urine is actually useful, not only not offensive, but actually useful. So to harm such creatures is a great sin. So the modern politicians, they don't think anything. They don't think anything at all. You know, there's thousands and thousands and thousands or millions and millions of cows and bulls that are living a life of torture and pain only to die a horrible, untimely death in the slaughterhouse simply to satisfy the tongue of the citizens, of the human citizens, for no reason. You know, you're allowed to eat animals in an emergency, although even then one shouldn't eat the cow. But no reason. There's so much food that people are fighting with obesity because there's too much food. And still they're killing the animals for no reason. And not only killing animals, but killing the most offenseless animal, the cow and the bull. And the politicians are not worried that they're losing their reputation by allowing this to go on. Of course, most of them are not even aware, they're not even thoughtful that this animal killing is wrong. But in any case, they're not concerned because the modern leaders are not really, most of them anyway, I can't say all of them, but they're not really Kshatriyas. They're really Shudras or maybe Vaishyas. They're actually motivated by immediate pleasure or by wealth, or they're motivated just by some kind of gross power. But they're not really motivated by honor. They don't have a sense of honor. So although this sense of honor and reputation for doing the right thing is in the mode of passion, it's much higher than the mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance is vikarma, sinful life. Mode of passion is karma, dharma, pious life. Mode of goodness is karma yoga. One is trying to engage in transcendental life or the higher levels of karma, like brahminical karma. So the mode of passion and perhaps also the mode of goodness is varnashram. Mode of ignorance is without varnashram. Mode of ignorance, you have your tendencies, but you're not using them according to the rules. So varnashram starts with the mode of passion, really. You can say, well, in Varnashram, the Shudras are in ignorance and the Vaishyas have some mixed ignorance. Yes, but they're guided by the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas who are in the modes of passion and goodness. They're the ones guiding the society. So even those who have a tendency toward the mode of ignorance are having their propensities used in a pious way. And some of their tax money going for sacrifice and so forth. So for society to be human, for society to be civilized, there has to be varnashram. And this starts with the mode of passion. Prabhupada says varnashram is established by the government. Therefore, the mode of passion is to be, how shall we say, encouraged for people in general over the mode of ignorance. Of course, Prabhupada says formally the standard of society was the mode of goodness. That when you had a society run by the Kshatriyas who were in the mode of passion, still, they had a sense of what Prabhupada calls brahminical culture. He often talks about how the Kshatriyas would follow brahminical culture, and you wonder, what does that mean? And that is that you can't actually have somebody interested in real honor and real dharma unless there's Brahmins teaching the truth without compromise. It's not possible. As soon as you don't have any Brahmins teaching the truth, what dharma and what honor are the Kshatriyas going to follow? They're not going to know what to do and what not to do. They're going to become bewildered. So certainly the modern politicians who are unfortunately working in ignorance, sometimes with a little passion, would do very well to come materially up to the standard of the mode of passion and the mode of Dharma, and to care enough about their reputation and their karma and their future life that they would protect the innocent members of their society. They can hardly protect the innocent humans in their society. You know, we see signs in the subway stations and the tube stations here in London. There are pickpockets in the area, watch your valuables. So they can't even protect the human citizens, what to speak of the animals. But we as Vaishnavas, we're not so concerned simply with bringing people from ignorance to passion. We certainly have some interest, otherwise we wouldn't have any interest in establishing Varnashram. But our main interest is really bringing people to bhakti. That's our main interest. So what does this honor thing have to do with bhakti? Because it seems like, as we've already said, that in bhakti, you don't care about honor and reputation. In fact, it says that one who's in love with Krishna is chanting and dancing without caring for outsiders. Never mind what anyone else thinks. I mean, I think this is one of the hallmarks of the members of the Hare Krishna movement. That, you know, we're famous for this. We're famous for going out on the street dressed in what for most societies is very funny clothing and singing and dancing on the street. Going up to strangers and giving them books, you know, or giving them cookies without caring what people think. I mean, for many people who join the Hare Krishna movement, it's quite an adjustment to live like that and never mind what about my honor and my reputation. But we do find that great devotees like Arjuna, who are told to give up the passion for honor, who are told to have humility and not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others, we are told here that they actually do care about reputation. So what's going on here? Why do the Kshatriyas, who are actually devotees, and not only devotees, but pure devotees, and not even just pure devotees, but pure devotees who have Krishna's personal association, like Arjuna did, why are they caring about reputation? They're not really caring about their reputation at all, actually. What they're really caring about is Krishna's reputation. You know, just like if you go into a shop or you deal with some company. So the way the employees behave reflects on the whole company. So the other day, one devotee here offered to buy me a new alarm clock because the light on my old alarm clock broke mysteriously so. So I was doing a little research, where can I get a new clock? And I called different companies. One company I called, they say our phone doesn't work anymore, just send us an email. And one company I called, the woman who answered the phone, I asked her some questions. She said, let me go see. So she goes to the stock room and she pulls out a clock and she sees what kind of battery it has and how it closes. And I said, you know, does it show the temperature only in Celsius or also Fahrenheit? And she looked it up. And then the friend wanted to buy me this clock. I gave her information of three different companies. I said, but you know, it'd be nice to buy from this one company, because the lady who answered the phone was so helpful and pleasant. So, you know, I don't even know this person's name, and I'm not really getting the clock there for her, but for her company. She made a good impression of her whole company. And that's how the person working for a business, working in a shop, that's how they think. They're thinking, my behavior reflects on the company. Now, of course, why do they care about the reputation of the company? They care about the reputation of the company because they want the company to get customers, because if the company gets customers, they may get a commission or they may continue to have a job. So ultimately, they're concerned about themselves. But the point is still valid, that the person is thinking about what is the reputation of my company, not what is my personal reputation. I mean, it could be sometimes you may send a letter a letter glorifying a particular employee. So I've done that. I've written to a company and I've said, you know, this particular employee really did a fantastic job. Because I know generally people just write with complaints. But that's not what they're expecting. It's not what they're expecting. They have some sense that their duty is to glorify the company that they work for. Why? Because that company is what's maintaining them. So the devotee has a sense that my business is to glorify Krishna. That really when someone honors me, they're honoring Krishna. So I've told this story before, but when I was a new devotee, very new, I'd been in the movement just a few months. So Prabhupada's book, Lord Chaitanya and Five Features, which is Adi Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, Chapter 7, got published. And in that chapter, there's a lot of the descriptions of the arguments of the Mayavadis and the counter-arguments of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's convincing Prakasananda Sarasvati and Srila Prabhupada is really extrapolating in the purports, going through the arguments of the Mayavadis and our response. So I read it very eagerly, and I was taking notes and really memorizing both sides of these arguments. And then at a Sunday feast, there was one Indian gentleman came to the temple for the first time, and he started making all these arguments from the Mayavadi side. And because I had just read this chapter, I was able to give Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's responses, practically verbatim. I just finished reading the chapter and taking notes on it. And this gentleman was so impressed. He said, I've never met anyone in my life so intelligent. So I could immediately understand that the intelligence was not mine. And I said to him, actually, this is not my intelligence. I'm simply repeating the words of my spiritual master. So I felt very happy. I gained a lot of faith in Krishna consciousness. I gained a lot of faith in Srila Prabhupada and in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I found the same thing would happen, by the way, that man later joined the movement, that would happen also doing book distribution at the airport, that I found that I could philosophically defeat almost anybody. Even though I was very new to Krishna consciousness, and really my understanding of the Krishna conscious philosophy was at a very beginning level. And the fact that I was able to do that, it didn't give me faith in me. It gave me faith in Krishna. It gave me faith in Krishna consciousness. And I felt that I was bringing honor to Krishna. I was bringing glory to Krishna. Just like Lord Nityananda, he said, if we deliver this Jaghai and Madhai, then Lord Chaitanya's name will be honored. Now it's interesting because the person who was delivering them was Lord Nityananda. And yet he felt that by delivering them, that Lord Chaitanya's name would be honored. So this is the mood of the devotee. The devotee wants to be honored in such a way that their master is honored. Jayananda Prabhu, who was serving out in San Francisco, used to take out the trash, used to take out the rubbish. And there's a famous story of one young man who was visiting the temple, and he asked if he could do anything to help. And they said, oh, well, you can help. Right now we're doing the rubbish collection. So he went to help Jayananda, and he said, wow, if the garbage men here are so transcendentally blissful, just imagine what everybody else is like. So he became convinced about Krishna consciousness by seeing the behavior of Jayananda. So that kind of honor the devotee is interested in, and the devotee is very interested in not dishonoring his master. The devotee doesn't want to do anything that will bring shame and dishonor to his master. This is one reason, by the way, why it's very wonderful to wear Vaishnava attire out in public. Because if you're wearing tilak and neck beads, etc., out in public, then you're going to be very conscious that whatever I do reflects on my masters. That people will judge Krishna, they'll judge Srila Prabhupada by my own behavior. Now, some people don't like that kind of pressure, but frankly, it's a very good kind of pressure. It reminds us that we should behave righteously as a credit to our master.
And it's interesting that not only does the Vaishnav Kshatriya think like this, the Vaishnav Kshatriya is thinking, let me be honorable so Krishna is glorified, that Krishna is glorified as Patita Pavana, that Krishna is glorified as Dinabandhu, the friend of the poor. I mean, here the Kshatriyas are described as the friend of the poor, the friend of the helpless. But really, Krishna is the greatest friend of the poor. And who really can be a friend other than Krishna? Prabhupada says, anyone who says that I am your friend, they're a cheater. Only Krishna is the friend. Of course, if I give you Krishna, I'm also, in one sense, your friend. If I introduce you to your friend. But anyway, it's interesting that not only the Kshatriyas had this mood, but even the Brahmanas had this mood. And we can say, okay, well, the Kshatriyas, you know, they already have a position of honor. They're using it in Krishna's service by wanting Krishna to be honored. But we find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who exemplifies the devotee, and not just the devotee, but the devotee as who is externally a Brahmana and a sannyasi, when he's asked to meet with King Prataparudra, his reason for refusing is that he'll become ridiculed by the people in general. And he says in Madhulila 12:51-52, he says that if a sannyasi meets with materialistic persons, it'll be like a black spot on a white cloth. It will be a very dominant fault. And he said, I always have to fear public opinion with my body, mind, and words. So actually, anyone who's a Vaishnava, and no matter what their external role in society, is thinking, let my Lord be glorified through my actions, and let my Lord not be shamed through my actions. So they're not interested in enjoying the satisfaction of being honored, but they are interested in enjoying the satisfaction of seeing Krishna being honored. So this is, of course, the essence of Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada says. This very nice verse from the first canto, chapter 5, I think it's text 33. Does not a thing applied therapeutically cure a disease which was caused by that very same thing? And Prabhupada says, this verse is the essence of Krishna consciousness movement. That milk is the cause of your dysentery, but the same milk, when it is medically treated, can cure it. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this desire for fame and honor is the first weakness of heart that brings us into materialistic consciousness. And we see that it's very hard to root it out. But we can use this same desire to become free from materialistic consciousness. So let's see, the devotee, what the devotee is not interested in and what we should be interested in. So we shouldn't be interested in respect for our borrowed qualities. Someone giving us respect or honor for our bodily beauty or bodily talents or bodily wealth, which are temporary and simply borrowed. They really have this respect for the body. It has nothing to do with me. I mean, I often think it interesting that people get complimented for having an attractive bodily feature. Now, in one sense, it's due to our previous karma, so we can say that we do have something to do with our appearance. But, you know, once you're born in this body, there's not a whole lot you can do about your appearance. It's not like it's something that, you know, by my hard work or something like that. It's quite interesting. It's almost just some sort of genetic roulette. And yet we flatter people. Oh, you're so attractive. Or, oh, you're so intelligent. You know, what does that have to do with us? So we're not interested in this honor for these false, temporary, external things. Also, the devotee's not interested in being considered better than anyone else. So to get a job done, you may have to take a position of authority. You know, the king certainly had to take a position of authority. But it's not that they thought that they were a better person. Maharaj Yudhisthira, he wasn't able to find anyone who was lower than he was. So just like many, many times when Srila Prabhupada was asked, you know, are you the guru? He'd say, no, I'm everyone's servant. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati would always say, Dasosmi, I am your servant. So the devotee is never interested in being artificially put in a position where they're higher or better than others, because the devotee sees everyone is equal. Vijavanaya sampane brahmani gavi hastani suni chaiva swapake ja pandita samadarshinaha. The devotee sees that really there's no question of one person being higher or lower. It's just not true. It's an illusory thing. Also, the devotee doesn't have attaining honor as the goal or the impetus for their action. That's the mode of passion, where you do things for the purpose of attaining honor. As Prabhupada said, humility is not being anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. So you never think, I'm going to do this or I'm not going to do this because it will bring me personal honor or it will bring me personal dishonor. And the devotee also has no attachment to enjoying the honor, that whatever honor may be given to them. Nor do they lament and suffer when they receive dishonor. This is a very difficult thing to do, but this is actually the principle of the devotee. So I was talking recently to one friend of mine who went through a breakup of her marriage, and afterwards her friends, her relatives, they all treated her very badly. People stopped talking to her. People would say nasty things about her, and she was cut out from many activities in the society of devotees. So she was very grievously afflicted by this dishonor. So the devotee rises above this dishonor. People may criticize me. They may criticize me unfairly. I had also one devotee several months ago write me letter after letter after letter. I've been accused of doing this thing wrong, but I didn't really do it. And, you know, it's very hard. I know that whenever I've been dishonored, it's one of the most difficult things to deal with, one of the most painful things. Especially Krishna also says that, for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. You know, extremely painful. But the devotee is above this. The real Vaishnava, if they're honored, they don't enjoy it, they don't relish it. And if they're dishonored, they don't lament. This always reminds me of an old Frank Sinatra song. I forget it exactly, but something like, you know, this month they all love you and this month they don't love you. So at one point you're everybody's favorite and the next time everybody's shooting you down. And oh, it was called That's Life. So especially I'm sure for someone like him who was very much in the public eye, that he was very aware of the ups and downs of honor and dishonor. And you can be honored and dishonored for the same thing on two different days. You know, some political regimes, if you're very loyal to the first regime, then you may get executed by the second regime. So the very same activity that brings you honor, or just like in American history, we have all the school children learn that the spy that was executed was Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold's name is synonymous with traitor. But of course, he was loyal to the British. And at that time, America was still a British colony. So was he honorable or dishonorable for being loyal to his mother country? So it was honorable to the British and it was dishonorable to the Americans. This is the nature of honor and dishonor. What one person honors, another dishonors. What a person honors today, they will dishonor tomorrow. So one who is attached to this honor and dishonor, one who's trying to enjoy, if you try to enjoy honor, you'll be devastated by dishonor. And it's not something that you can control. You can think, well, if I always act honorably, I will be honored. Well, good luck with that one. You know, you can always act honorably and be dishonored anyway. And you can do something dishonorable and either nobody will notice or they'll honor you for what's dishonorable. We see this all the time. We see people who've done something dishonorable and they get honored, and people who did something honorable and they get dishonored. So if one's attached to this, one will not be a very happy person, because it's not something you can control, and attachment to honor is, it's worse than death. You actually feel that you would rather die than be dishonored, especially by the people who formerly honored you. So the devotee gives up this roller coaster of honor and dishonor. Now, what are the devotees interested in? The devotees are interested in, Prabhupada says, being above suspicion. One devotee Prabhupada wrote to, he said, instead of criticizing the other devotees, why don't you be above suspicion? And that way, whatever you say, they will take you seriously. So this is one of the principles here of Maharaj Parikit. He wanted to have a spotless reputation so that his citizens would follow him. And Prabhupada talks about Maharaj Ramachandra twice here in this purport. Maharaj Ramachandra was so careful that the citizens would respect him and obey him that he banished Sita because people were criticizing his reputation because of Sita. So he knew that if people don't respect an authority, the authority is ineffective in their duty. And this is exactly what's happened all over the world. And unfortunately not exempting the Hare Krishna movement. That leaders act in a dishonorable way, they lose their reputation, and then nobody wants to follow them anymore. And the unfortunate thing is, even if only some leaders are dishonorable, the reputation of leaders in general becomes tarnished, and then nobody wants to follow leaders at all, and it's a horrible situation. So this is true all over the world. People don't want to follow their governments, students don't want to follow their teachers, wives don't want to follow their husbands, parents don't want to follow their children, disciples don't want to follow their gurus. Everywhere. You know, employees don't want to follow their boss, because the reputation of so many authorities has been sullied. So many people, you know, one can read in the newspaper every day about parents who are neglecting or abusing their children, or men who are beating their wives, or governments who are cheating their citizens, or some guru who's having some secret fall down with their disciples, and so forth and so on. On and on and on and on and on. And when the reputation becomes tarnished, then there can't be any peace in society. So the devotees are interested, because the devotees want to be expert in their service. And how are you going to be expert in your service unless you're above suspicion? How can you do your service nicely for Krishna? You can't. As we already said, the devotees are interested in bringing glory to Krishna. And they're interested in enjoying seeing Krishna being glorified. And the devotees who are interested in doing their service to a high level of quality, whether it's protecting others as Maharaj Parikit or teaching the truth. And to do that, there has to be some respect. You know, I thought for many times, why do we introduce a speaker? To give the audience some faith in that speaker's credentials. If people don't have any respect, any trust, they can't learn anything or they can't follow. And also the devotees interested in the reputation of other devotees. So Maharaj Parikit here wasn't just thinking of his own reputation, he was thinking of the reputation of all of the descendants of Kunti. He was thinking of the reputation of his father and his grandfather and his grand uncles. So as long as we're attached to this honor and affected by dishonor, we're not going to be very happy in this world. I mean, in fact, it's one of the divine qualities to be free from the passion for honor. And the basis of all of our advancement is humility. Humility, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about as being equal to nishtha. So going through the door to the higher levels of bhakti, we must have humility. So we have to give up this passion for honor, this desire, this ambition to be honored by others, and this lamentation of being dishonored by others. But we can use this, we can turn this milk into yogurt by adding some medicinal qualities to the yogurt. And that is being interested for the honor of Krishna, being interested for the honor of Krishna's devotees, and being interested in doing our service expertly, which means that we also have to set a very high example and be above suspicion. And then whatever our service is doing, whether it's protecting innocent creatures like cows, whether it's teaching and preaching, whether it's just being an exemplary grihastha, whatever it may be, we can actually do that properly. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions?
Thank you for the class. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I liked your example about the employee representing a company's reputation. We sometimes hear the word saying that they don't care about institution. And according what, you know, like you, with that example that you gave, that employee is a company's representative, isn't it that Prabhupada are going to be judged after some years, according how actually his institution functioning?
Yeah, well, I think that's true to some extent. You know, obviously, I as an individual, I can't control how the whole institution is viewed, but at least I can think of myself as doing my part to represent the institution of ISKCON, or just to represent Srila Prabhupada as an individual, and to represent the Sampradaya, to represent Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I mean, because the fact is, people are judging like that. Whether I like that or not is really irrelevant. That people are looking at my behavior and they are looking at my character, and they're forming judgments, rightly or wrongly, about Srila Prabhupada, about Krishna, about the Gaudiya Sampradaya, and perhaps also about ISKCON from my behavior. I mean, this is just the way it is. Just like we've seen even other Gaudiya groups outside of ISKCON, that if some of their members behave very nicely, or if some of their members don't behave very nicely, that people tend to judge the whole group by those members' behavior. It's just how it is. You know, we can say that that's not right and it's not fair. And, you know, even if you say you don't care about ISKCON, well, what about Srila Prabhupada? What about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And I think it's inevitable. You can't say, well, my behavior doesn't have any reflection on my lineage.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you.
Ruth, anyone else? Great class. Dharma Didi. Vidagda Madhava makes his appearance.
Jai Vidagda Madhava Prabhu.
Hi, welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, whenever action a great man performs, come and then follow. You know, verses in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You have to give some sort of an example. If you don't, then people are going to point to that, and they're going to say, "Well, Parikit Maharaj, he didn't do that, or he did that." And that's where also criticism is very destructive if it's not done, you know, with some positive purpose. But at the same time, the flip side of that is, we don't even have a dialogue because all criticism is banned. Anybody that criticizes branded envious. So it's pretty, it's complex. But anyway, it's a great class. I thought you'd covered the base really well.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for your input. Anybody else? That's a lovely comment. Thank you. Anyone else have a comment or question?
A comment regarding really not wanting a reputation and fame, but accepting for a higher purpose. I was thinking of one thing that touched me very much was a few years ago when there was that crash of the airplane that crashed into the Hudson River. I think it was Captain Sullenberger or something. It was amazing happening where there was some mechanical failure just after he left the New York airport, and he wasn't able to make it back to the airport, and his only option was to try to land this thing in the Hudson River. And miraculously, he did it, and nobody was hurt. And when the plane landed, he was so perfect in his execution of getting everyone out of the plane. He was like the last person to leave. So I remember he was on, I saw this thing on the news where he was being interviewed, and actually it may have been the Larry King show. Anyway, he was, I believe it was Larry King. And Larry King was saying to him that, you know, you're really a great hero. Everybody sees you as a hero. And he said, you can tell he's quite humbled. He said, actually, I'm not a hero. I'm just doing my job. This is what we're trained to do. And I just did what any other pilot would have done. But Larry King kept sort of pressing the point. And he said, well, you know, by the way, several years ago, there was also a lot of things in the news about all these heroes were sort of being dashed because of doping, taking steroids. Mm-hmm. All these great heroes were just being, losing their reputation. So Larry King was making the point that it was, it's kind of good that he sets his reputation as a hero for what he did. So Captain Sullenberger said, well, if that's the case, that if there could be some good out of my being accepted as a hero, if that will help people in their lives, then I'll accept it. And otherwise he wouldn't. I just thought, I appreciated that very much, that he was willing to accept being a hero for the benefit of others, but really not for his own aggrandizement.
No, very nice. Yes, well, that's ultimately the mood of a Vaishnava. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought it was a good parallel.
Anybody else?
If I have time, I'd like to make three comments and one question. Number one was a great class, by the way. I had never thought of things that you brought up, like, for instance, when Arjuna was told by Krishna, you know, your reputation will be spoiled. Mm. I was always thinking, that sounds material. But the way you explained it was very nice. One thing is, I think that it's easier to swallow not being honored than being dishonored. Dishonored seems to be really hard to take, whereas being honored, whatever. At least for me. And then my question is this: when teachers, leaders, politicians in general, they want honor. They are concerned about their reputation. So I'll rest it at that. There's a couple of.
Well, yeah, I discussed that. That basically part of the mode of passion is that the main impetus for your action is honor. So that's true. And Srila Prabhupada is saying it's much better to be concerned about your reputation for doing good, pious work than not to care. If you don't care, you're in the mode of ignorance. So it's far better for the leaders to think, well, I want to be honored for taking care of people. And that's from a material point of view, that is a higher principle. We're just speaking on a material level, because Srila Prabhupada also seemed to be referring to that in this purport.
Well, in the purport, maybe I just don't understand, because it says that in modern days, the leaders are not even afraid of killing such offenses. Okay, I'm sorry, I read it wrong. You say they're not afraid of killing animals, not that they're afraid of losing their reputation. Okay, I'm sorry, I misread.
Yeah, because it says, if you look at the whole sentence, the descendants of the sons of King Pritha, like Maharaj Pricket, were afraid of losing their reputations. But in the modern days, the leaders are not even afraid of killing such offenseless animals. So the modern, my understanding of this, of what Srila Prabhupada is saying here, I'm sure it's not by any means the only understanding, is that it's much better to be concerned about your honor in terms of protecting the helpless, which is your job, than not to care. Than just say, well, we don't care if we kill the helpless, so what?
You know, it's from a material point of view, I see this as a material argument, not as a spiritual argument. But from a material point of view, the leaders, it's much better to care about your reputation in terms of dharma, not just to care about being honored for whatever, but to care about being honored for being dharmic is much higher than not to care about being honored for being dharmic. However, Maharishi Parikshit and the Pandavas, their caring about being honored was actually transcendental. It wasn't in the mode of passion.
Okay, what about my point? I think, anyway, I don't really care about being honored, but it seems like it's a lot harder to swallow when you're dishonored for something you didn't even do. Or it wasn't your fault.
Yeah, of course, none of us particularly mind being honored for something we didn't do. That doesn't bug us so much. You know, I mean, if we get a lot of honor and praise for something that we really had either no responsibility for or very little responsibility for, we'll object, but not very convincingly. However, if we get dishonored for something we didn't do, or we get dishonored out of proportion to what we did, we object very strongly. And, you know, I'd say that most of us are more attached to being honored than being dishonored. I would agree that most people are disturbed more by being dishonored than by whether or not they get a high degree of honor. I mean, the only people who are really concerned with a high degree of honor are the kshatriyas, and especially the top kshatriyas, the people who are the kings and the princes and the generals, not necessarily the lower level kshatriyas. Most of the rest of society is not terribly concerned with honor, and that's not necessarily a good quality. It may be a good quality for the brahmanas, for the vaishyas and the shudras. It's actually a kind of disqualification, that they're not so concerned, that a vaishya will be willing to do dishonest business deals to make money, even though it will bring him dishonor, and a shudra may engage in something that's not very proper just for pleasure, even though it will bring them dishonor. So it's better, actually, to be interested in honor than to be in the mode of ignorance. But as far as why it's so difficult to take, my own feeling about this is that dishonor is very threatening. So I can pretty much get what I need in life, even if I don't get very much honor, even if I don't get honored beyond that of an ordinary person. But if I'm dishonored, my needs are really severely threatened. You know, dishonor means I may be rejected by my family and my community. I may lose my employment possibilities. I may not be able to make money to maintain myself. I might be forbidden entrance in a country. I might not be able to go where I want to go. So I see that dishonor, it really threatens us. The whole concept of dishonor, as long as we're thinking that our needs are supplied by some material arrangement outside of Krishna's control, that dishonor is very, very frightening. Whereas a high degree of honor is not necessary for most of us. First of all, psychologically, it's only a tiny fraction of the population who's really strongly motivated by wanting a high degree of honor. And second of all, most of us can get everything we need with just kind of an ordinary degree of honor. So that's what I think what the reason is. But the fact that we're so disturbed by being dishonored is definitely indicative of us having the wrong shelter. Because if Krishna's taking care of me, it doesn't really matter whether or not other people are dishonoring me. You know, a devotee wrote me recently, I've lost my source of income. I said, Krishna's your source of income. You know, Krishna's our source of community, Krishna's our source of income, Krishna's our source of friendship, and so forth. And for me, whenever I notice my mind going to the sphere of dishonor, I think about one devotee I know who actually did something wrong, but he was dishonored way beyond the things he did wrong. So, you know, he was, did wrong to a certain percentage, but his dishonor was very extreme. And still I've seen that Krishna takes care of this devotee. This devotee gets food and shelter and clothes and friends and even engagement in service, even though he was very, very greatly dishonored. And when I see that, I remember that Krishna always takes care. I mean, that's a contemporary example for me, and because it's contemporary and I know the person, it gives me a lot of solace and allows me to beat my mind with a stick whenever my mind goes to this, but you'll be dishonored, oh no, the world will collapse. You know, shastrically you can think about how Vidura was dishonored, how the Pandavas were dishonored in the gambling match. They had to live for a year incognito as servants, which for kings was extreme dishonor. It may not sound like that big of a deal to us, but from their perspective, it was very extreme dishonor. And we can think of Srila Prabhupada was not treated in a very honorable way by some of his godbrothers also. And yet Krishna honored these devotees beyond measure. So we're not dependent upon people in general for how they, in terms of how they treat us, for how happy we're going to be, or how prosperous we're going to be, or how anything we're going to be. And if we remember that, then we can be much more detached from this dishonor thing.
Fabulous answer. Thank you so much. Really, there's a great insight into the nature and the mind of Kshatriyas and how to handle honor, dishonor. Just, thank you very much.
Sure. Is there anybody else? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.